Hello, I'm Chris Fleischer, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel, an intelligent, lively discussion on astrology, art, and adventure. Timing is everything, and as the great wheel turns, we are best prepared when we are best informed. Join me as I explore the current planetary alignments and offer insights for coping with change. Educational, informative, enlightening, the Turning of the Wheel is a welcome pause in your daily swirl of constant change. Through intelligent discourse, inspired guests, and educational segments, I will help to enlighten your knowledge of astrology and guide you to accept change as the great wheel of life turns. Call in with your questions and speak with some of the greatest visionaries in the time-tested practice of astrology. Turning of the Wheel, Astrology, Art, and Adventure with Chris Fleischer, each Thursday, live, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, on Contact Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. My name's Chris Fleischer. This is Turning of the Wheel. This is a radio show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure. And today our topic is going to be Vedic astrology. Now, many of you understand and who listen to my show on a regular basis understand about how we talk about Western astrology, but there's other kinds of astrology practices in the world which are very fascinating, I think, just simply because of the fact that their approach is so different and that they also come down with the same sort of information at the end despite the fact that their approach is different. My guest today is Joni Patry, and she's going to be joining me in a few minutes here after I do a few introductions and talk a little bit about where things are. But the idea is to sort of entertain the idea of looking at other alternative forms of astrology, especially with regard to, the sort of the ancient Indian practice of Vedic astrology. Vedic astrology does come from India. That's where its roots are formed. And, you know, astrology really is the study of karma, you know, that which is action, which is reaction in terms of the past, present, and the future. It sort of has an interplay. It is sort of, I guess what I would say, is it observes the interplay between beings within the space of time and place, is more than anything else. And so it's that interplay of time and place and action and cycles and, being in the moment at a certain time, and the degree to which we can predict that is all part of what astrology is all about. Now, I know very much about Western astrology. I practice it daily. I've got a huge client base, and I understand what's going on there. And Vedic astrology has always fascinated me because we do come down, we do derive the same information essentially at the end, but our approach is very different. But I think that's what's neat about it, is that the approach is different. And, of course, some of the planets are different. In Vedic astrology, the signs are not the same as they are in Western astrology. They're off by one in some cases. And so that's always been an interesting angle to me. I understand that Joni's here. I'd like to welcome her. Joni, are you there? Welcome to Turning of the Wheel. Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on the show here. So I was trying to go on a little bit about the idea of, you know, how astrology is definitely about karma and how it has to deal with, you know, sort of finding your true purpose in life and stuff like that. And I guess the major difference and what always confuses people, and this is my part of my goal here, is to sort of educate the listening audience, is to the differences between Western Vedic astrology.
Yeah.
And since you have a good handle on both, why don't you kind of give us some little background information on the major differences? Now, as before, I want to preface that by saying, is it true, though, that the same information, the same sort of character traits do evolve the same regardless of the form that you use? Is that true?
That's very true.
Okay.
Yeah. So the way that I see it is Western astrology really describes the personality more so.
Right.
But Vedic astrology really gives you more a sense of a person's soul essence. It is exceptional for prediction. So
wow.
That's really why I made the shift. Most of my clients come to me because they want to know their future. And although Western astrology is very good and predictive, Vedic astrology just gives more details and more specific with the timing. But overall, you're going to find that both Western astrology will predict the same things in a different way. The major difference is that Vedic astrology takes into account precession of the equinoxes, which is the shift that's been happening over time. And that is our reference point in the zodiac has shifted backwards, the difference of almost a whole sign from this point.
Right.
2,000 years ago, both zodiacs, tropical and sidereal, did line up.
Mm-hmm.
But now, over time, the slow process of precession has put us back to almost the beginning of Pisces, where Western astrologers still use the beginning of Aries.
I see. So there really is in some ways, is far more accurate with being in alignment with the universe and where we actually are.
It's really where it's the exact placements of what the astronomers would tell you where a planet is placed
now,
in relationship.
Is it true that some signs do still overlap, depending upon which degree you are, right?
Yes, that's true. But the degrees will differ.
Degrees will differ, right. But it's possible for someone who is an existing Western Aries, it's possible for them to still be an Aries in Vedic astrology, right? if they're late in the chart, right?
Right, exactly. The last 6 degrees of a sign will stay the same.
I see.
So there's 30 degrees in a sign, so it's gone back almost 24 degrees.
Now, I think the biggest question that most people have that I hear all the time is that if you go through your process of living your life as, say, an Aries, and all of a sudden you find that you're a Pisces, those are significantly different types of personality traits and approaches, and their characteristics are significantly different, at least within the realm of Western astrology.
Correct. But the way that I see it, once again, is we're talking, when I talk to people about their Vedic chart, it just kind of, they feel like, you really know who I am on a soul level.
Right.
Whereas the Western astrology is great for personality level, but the soul never changes. The personality does.
I see.
So you'll really see that they do both tie in, but then again, usually, because it goes backwards a sign, generally it's like people's planets will go into a sign that they're familiar with anyway, like maybe the moon shifts to a sign that it is in the Western chart, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You'll see the similarities.
Yeah, I guess I've always been of a mind that the closer you are to the cusp of a sign in Western astrology, you do take on characteristics of the sign before you or preceding you,
Absolutely.
Depending on which way you're going. And
Absolutely.
It's not really until you're sort of smack dab in the middle of the 30 degrees that you kind of get that really strong essence of the individual sign that you're talking about.
Right.
But, you know, what's interesting about that is that it's always that sort of that sense of... you know, if you're a fire sign, and say you're an Aries, so let's just use that for a good example,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden you're backing into a Pisces, which is considered to be a water sign
right.
in Western astrology, you've got two different kinds of energy there. You've got one which is very impulsive and action-oriented, whereas one is much more emotional and sort of subdued and sort of wisdom-oriented. So there's a definite different flavor there, for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely quite a change, which I noticed your sun sign did exactly do, so that's
exactly.
hard for you to accept.
Well, I do.
Understand.
I have a lot of water in my chart anyway. I've got an awful lot of water planets in my chart,
yeah.
You know, at least according to Western astrology. I've got, you know, Mars and Scorpio. I've got Venus and Pisces and Moon and Cancer, all of which
mm-hmm.
are water signs. So a lot of my personal planets are strongly watered. Anyway, so I can appreciate the element of the water in my particular chart. But I'm wondering how other people would rationalize that with regard to the sort of the disparity between that.
Let me just tell you that the Vedic really is based on what's called the nakshatras. And this is a whole other dimension that's totally, you know, unfamiliar to Western astrologers. But whereas you have the 12 signs of the zodiac, we have the 27 nakshatras. So that is the zodiac divided into smaller pieces. Actually, each nakshatra covers a range of 13 degrees, 20 minutes, whereas a sign is 30 degrees. And if you read about the meanings in the depth of the nakshatras, they're almost like personality analysis.
I see.
And
so you get more granularity that way.
Oh, it's so diverse. It's so deep. And you're going to find that there's sometimes three nakshatras in a sign, and they have specific meanings that will blow you away.
Yeah. So they sort of in some ways, compare to the decans in Western astrology.
Yes, exactly. You got it.
Yeah. Now, Western astrology, what happens, for those of you that don't know, each sign is divided into three charts. There's 0 through 10 degrees, 10 through 20 degrees, and then 20 degrees through 30 degrees. Within any one sign, and they take on characteristics of their associated element.
Right.
So in the case of Aries, the first 10 degrees would be Aries, the second 10 degrees would be Aries, Leo, and the third would be Aries, Sagittarius, because Leo and Sagittarius are both fire signs.
Right. And the decans are actually based on Vedic astrology.
Yes, that's what I thought. I was going to ask you that next. But it's not quite as mathematically clean as it is with Western astrology, where you've got these demarcations of 10 degrees each. You've got this, 13.2 degrees.
Right. And you see, what's very interesting is that this system, the whole Indian calendar is based on the nakshatras. If you're an Indian, somebody asks you, what's your sign? Actually, they would say, what's your star? And you would give them the name of the nakshatra that your moon's in, because essentially this is actually a lunar-based system. That's another difference, whereas I believe Western astrology is a solar-based system.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you really get more granularity, what it seems like, because you're able to delve deeper into the minutiae of the chart in some cases.
Exactly.
I mean, we can only go so far with Western astrology,
which does
give us a very broad... I mean, it's good for transits. It's good for synastry, which we have. Synastry, of course, is the combination of two people within a chart. transiting charts is sort of where your natal chart maps out according to where the stars are today.
Good.
So it's accurate with regard to that, but I think that the granularity that's provided by Vedic astrology is considerably different.
Right. And you see, the wherever your moon is placed in your chart is what our entire dasha system is based on, which is our predictive tool. So wherever the natal moon, what nakshatra it falls in, bases your whole pattern of life cycles. Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating. So you've based most of your predictive information on the position of the moon in the natal chart.
Absolutely. That's what it's based on.
And then you trace that against the transiting moon?
No. That has nothing to do with the transits at all. It's a system all by itself based on the nakshatras. Whatever nakshatra your moon falls in, each nakshatra is ruled by a planet, like the signs are ruled by a planet. And that begins your whole dasha sequence, what sign the nakshatra is ruled by.
So what sort of information can you derive from these charts with using the moon? What sort of predictive qualities do you sort of hone in on? What are the sort of things you look for in charts?
When I'm looking at someone's chart, I'll chart their whole dasha sequence, which I call it planetary cycles, which is based on the nakshatras, and it's whatever nakshatra your moon is in will determine that. So I can tell from birth to death every life experience that you will go through, every pattern. And it's actually a cleaner system than to work with all the transiting planets, although I will say this, we work with transits as well. So I bring in the combination of looking at the dasha system with the transits, and you can pinpoint more exactly the timing and events of a person's life predictably.
Now, what sort of events can you predict? I mean, do you actually see, is it theme-based or is it hard, fast predictions? Like, be careful driving for the next month. Is it sort of like you're going to be blessed
with? Yeah,
it's both. Okay.
Yeah, because if you're in a particular dasha, let's say of Mars, then that means that Mars transit becomes more powerful.
Right.
So you would pay more attention to the transit of Mars during a Mars dasha.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tie in together beautifully. And they work together. It's almost like your progress chart, because, I was a Western astrologer for 20 years. I definitely know all the systems of Western. So, it's like your progress chart, but this actually interfaces better with the transiting planet.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you notice certain, aside from the moon, which seems to be your main driving planet that you use as your format, as your predictor, do you also see other planets taking a significant role in certain things? Like in Western astrology, I always look for the placement of Jupiter for, sort of a sense of good fortune. I always look for Uranus for the idea of where you might see some upset in someone's chart. I look for Saturn. I look for Mars.
Those
are all the planets I look for. Yeah.
We call those karakas.
Okay.
And a karaka simply means indicator of. So, of course, the moon is the mother, the father is the sun, and Mars is actually siblings, brothers. And Venus is, of course, relationships. But Jupiter is relationships in a woman's chart. So we have all these karakas that are indicators of people in our lives.
I see.
And Jupiter is children. So if somebody were to ask you how many children would you have, you'd look on the condition of Jupiter in the chart.
Ah, I see. Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, when you think, in Western astrology, if I was an Aries, which I am, and that puts me back into Pisces,
mm-hmm.
is the terminology that Vedic astrology is used for Pisces the same as the terminology and the definition that Western astrologers use for Pisces?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's one of the things I think Vedic astrologers need to learn, though. They need to learn more about the descriptions of the signs because they don't really play a lot of emphasis on that. And as a Western astrologer, I do. But to look at the nakshatras that they're placed in definitely give it more specific meaning.
I see.
And so, therefore, your sun that falls back into Pisces from Aries in the Western chart goes into the nakshatra called Revati. And Revati is actually a very lucky nakshatra to have your sun in. It's
mm-hmm.
blessed, and it actually is ruled by Pushan, the god of travel, which represents that you're divinely protected whenever you travel. It has all sorts of specific things, and it means you love small animals and sometimes work with animals and things of that nature, but it's very specific.
Yeah, you get a lot more granularity there. I think, you know, Western astrology is very good, and when I'm doing readings for my clients, I can often bring in some of those concepts that you mentioned. But that's mostly based on my intuition and my ability to read the chart and sort of impressions I get. They're not sort of supported by the hard, fast data that you kind of get with Vedic astrology, if you know what I mean. Like when you were a Western astrologer, when you were doing readings in Western astrology, I'm sure you were able to interpret the chart, and each person interprets the chart differently. But because of your impressions and the feel and your intuitive qualities that you begin to bring into the reading, you're able to get some granularity. But that's pretty much the role of the astrologer in human form, whereas in your predictions with Vedic astrology, they're much more substantiated by hard data and real hard themes.
That's true. But, of course, don't forget the intuition always plays in.
Yeah, it does. You've always got to color your reading with that, I think. You've always got to be able to, pay homage to that because, you know, I think if you're in this field to begin with and you're interested in astrology, you've got a sense and a fascination with what makes people tick, where events undo, you know, cycles and seasons and all that stuff. And I think that the intuitive quality that we bring to the field is can't be understated because it's a very strong element of what brings out the chart and makes the reading. That's where the talent.
It's part of the process, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, do people, you say for Vedic astrology is primarily used as a predictive tool, so you must be getting people who are interested in what's going to happen with their lives, should they have, it's more of a timing issue for them, correct?
Right, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Now, when you're doing an astrology reading, do you ever dip back into the Western astrology as well?
No, I used to when I first started. I don't anymore. It's like I didn't need it anymore. This gave me more information.
Yeah, and you found that your results were much more accurate. And then did you follow up with your clients afterwards to see if and you're getting validation all along?
All along.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, I get the same thing with Western astrology.
Sure.
I mean, I will say that. But I think that it's the degree of accuracy that you might be getting more of with regard to Vedic astrology.
Yes.
But, you know, we do have this, you know, I still come back to the same concept. And it's the idea of me, of myself being a Pisces. I don't see myself as a Pisces in person, per se, unless Vedic Pisces has different characteristics than Western Pisces.
Well, I have to say, I have formulated a little bit of a different tone to the signs with Vedic. Simply have.
Mm-hmm.
And I will agree with that. But, you know, your son in Pisces, I look at Pisces as very compassionate and giving and understanding. And it's in your eighth house, so you're incredibly psychic and intuitive. I mean, those things have to fit you.
Yeah, well, they do fit me because that's sort of what I do that's what I do. I mean, so that does all fit there. But what about that sort of that fire, that drive, that Aries temperament, that sort of...
Well, you have Jupiter in Aries in the Vedic chart. So
that's
where I think that comes from. And then Mars aspects your Jupiter.
Yeah,
and Mars
aspects to Jupiter, right? And
yeah,
Mars
and Mars
still
aspects
in Scorpio?
That sign. No, it's in Libra, but it aspects Aries by opposition. In Vedic astrology, when a planet aspects a house and it rules it, it gives power to it.
I see.
So the ninth house is where your Jupiter is, and Aries and Mars aspects it and rules it. This gives you an incredible inspiration and for truth and spirituality and travel. Those are going to be things that are really exuded through you.
They always have been. I haven't, I've sort of been in a homebody mode because I've got, in Western astrology with a strong Cancer moon, you have, in the 10th house, you'd have the sense of, being a home person or that, but there's also this greater reach, which is kind of what we try to do with the radio show here, is to try to get knowledge out there and sort of, if we can't leave our house, we can at least travel the world via the airwaves and help people.
You spread the truth throughout the world with the show.
Yeah, exactly, and that's sort of the idea, is sort of to act as an educational mouthpiece for this wonderful science of astrology. I think people would benefit very well by incorporating sort of a homogenized version, such as you have. You know, you sort of straddle both. I know that you're much more familiar and actually more, you have more greater confidence in the Vedic astrology, but I do think that there is value in the Western astrology as well, simply because
I think it's just going to give you another dimension of yourself. That's really all I think it does. Western, I used it for 20 years. It's absolutely right on. Mm-hmm. You know, with personality describes you to a T. But this just gives you another dimension of yourself, and you've got to admit there's more to you than you know and you believe. There's other dimensions. So
right.
If your moon falls back into Gemini, and The way that I see a moon in Gemini is somebody that's constantly learning, writing, teaching, and communicating.
And that's what I do.
And it's very close to Uranus. So therefore, it's going to be about, you know, of the future information that you're constantly giving information about and transpiring to the world, the moon,
right.
The masses.
That's very much the case. And I mean, and information to the world and the way we communicate can be a multitude of different vehicles. It can be via radio, it can be via words, it can be via art, it can be via any number of things. And so, you know, information and themes and concepts and impressions can get out there in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And music is another angle, too. You know, any form of art really is an expression of the soul. It's sort of the soul's record or the soul's report. And as the soul is reporting to the universe, it uses a number of different things, and that's sort of where you follow your path, that you've got your karmic duty out there.
Yeah, now, so it's just more to it. It just gives you more information.
Yeah. Now, if you were to look at it, the birth chart of a child, say a 4 or 5 year old, would you be able to tell them or their parents at what point in time their life would begin to sort of go through, you know, either changes, or would you be able to find, you know, those significant milestones that people typically want, you know, birth, death, you know, career advancement, or whatever, or
exactly.
Fall from grace.
Yeah, but when you change into one of these planetary cycles, that's when your whole life changes. And any time I make reference to, well, you changed into this dasha this year, then people will go, yeah, that's when my whole life changed, because that's going to be a big shift of attention. So the dashas are ruled by a planet. So the dashas, the determination of how that dasha will be experienced is determined on how that planet's placed in your chart, what houses it's in, what houses it rules, what aspects it receives. So the position of that planet will determine how that experience will be, because it will be different for everyone depending
right.
on the
it's
chart.
Right, sort of, that's the stage setting of where it takes place in your chart. So that is the equivalent of the house in Western astrology.
Yes.
The dasha.
Oh, well, wherever that ruling planet of that dasha is placed, what house, that's going to be the area of life that becomes important.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating discovery, because I do think, you know, we're sort of speaking, I mean, obviously Vedic astrology has a language unto itself, much the way Western astrology does. We do have our own vernacular that we use and our vocabulary that we use. But I think that we're dealing with similar themes, and we're dealing with a similar approach to helping people through decision-making, through, you know, timing, which is vital in every people. You know, people oftentimes are perplexed because they're not making progress, when they're often, you know, chasing down the wrong street or down the wrong road and bumping into doors. But, you know, if you are more attuned to astrology and sort of in line with following your soul's purpose, you do find that the doors along the way open much easier, and they sort of have, because you're following your natural path.
Right.
There's a sense of natural harmony there and continuity that just runs through the chart.
Yeah, it's the path of least resistance.
Path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that, and I know that for a fact that Vedic astrology is often used and is widely used, I should rather state, for setting up marriages and from a compatibility standpoint. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
That's true, but I have to share with you one thing on that. I still use the Western synastry. It works much better for me.
Oh, do you really? Yeah.
I do. Yeah. You know, it's just like I use the Vedic chart, but, it, you know, if you have a sun moon with one person's sun hitting the other person's moon, that's what I'll notice. That kind
of thing. And that always seems to work in Western astrology, you know. Anytime you have a sun and a moon. Now, I had a guest the other day. I didn't realize this, but she was talking about Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. And they had, he had a Pisces sun and an Aquarius moon, and she had just the opposite.
Right.
And they had this wonderful synergy, which, you know, they're a very famous couple with a great sense of, long-term relationship, very devoted to each other. They sort of matched each other in almost a mutual reception kind of way.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And it was a very powerful relationship as a result. Also, I found that the ascendant, when the ascendant lines up with, or is in compatibility with the moon or the sun, you've also got a good combination, because there's an appreciation there for, the style and the way that you present yourself. It seems to resonate very quickly.
Exactly, yeah.
Has that been your case with Vedic as well?
It's the same thing. It's practically the same thing. I just use all the interplay of the planets in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how do you weigh Venus and Mars in the relationship?
Well, Venus is the woman in a man's chart, and I still think Mars has to do with the man in a woman's chart. But traditionally in Vedic astrology, they look for Jupiter in a woman's chart to depict their husband or mate. Yeah. And of course, the ruler of the seventh house and planets in the seventh house, and that is the house of marriage and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing as Western.
Yeah, now with regard to the dashas, which is actually the equivalent of the house in Western astrology, correct? It's sort of the placement in the chart where the action takes place, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Do those map to the Western astrology with regard to, you know, like in first house is about self and ego, second house is about possession, third house is about communication. Is there a similar theme that goes around? But of course, in your case, you've got 27. You must have much more, a broader set of scenes.
No, actually, the houses are identical to Western. The only difference is we have more definitions and meanings. For example, the second house is everything that it is in Western astrology. It's money, it's finances, it's what you value. But in Vedic astrology, we have additional meanings, and they truly work. And that is that the second house deals with early childhood. It deals with family happiness. And I think it's based on what we call some, it's really the derived house system. See, the second house is the eighth from the seventh, which represents your relationships. And planets and difficult planets cross through your second house. That could be the time of divorce because that's the eighth house, which means the end to the marriage.
It's the opposition of that, right?
No, it's actually eight houses from the seventh.
Okay.
You'll count from the seventh house.
Yeah.
The second house is eight houses from the seventh house.
Mm-hmm.
So the second house deals with the end of a marriage. And it also deals with the same thing that in Western astrology, it deals with the throat and the neck, like Taurus energy. But it also deals with the face, and it deals with what goes into your mouth and what comes out of your mouth. So in other words, your speech, your voice, and the foods you eat, whether you take in poisons or you eat well or you have a drug problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like what goes in the mouth and what comes out the mouth, because you see, just like in Western astrology, it rules the mouth. We've often looked at the second house in Western astrology as your teeth, and that's the same. So what I'm trying to say is it has a variety of meanings, not just money and values.
I see.
And each house is like that.
Yeah, there's much more granularity there. A much more broader set of details and characteristics that are there. Joni, we're going to take a quick break right now. We've got a 2.5-minute break that we come up with, and we'll be back on the other side. And if you're interested in opening up the phone lines, I can, unless you are comfortable still talking. We can do either way, but we'll see how things go. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and you and I can talk offline while we're going out.
All right. Thank you.
What is your destiny? Where are you going? What is your real purpose? Do you know? Do you want to know? Of course you do. It's your duty to yourself. We are all here for a reason, and we all have great potential. Discover all of this and more with a professional astrology reading. My name is Chris Fisher, and I can help you. Discover your strengths and work on your weaknesses, and live your life to its fullest capacity. Based on your birthday, birthplace, and birth time, an authentic astrology reading will allow you to live your life to the fullest and reveal your true purpose. Only real astrology can give you real information. It is your destiny, and it is your path. Write me at chris@chrisflisher.com and book a reading today. Or call me, 978-264-0668. That's 978-264-0668. www.chrisflisher.com.
Contact talkradio.com. Making choices? Choose the CTR Network as your source for soulful information.
As the world shrinks and our barriers come down, diverse cultures are striving for harmony, balance, and peace. To ease the transition, we need to expand with color, light, and tolerance. Now, you can become a global citizen and embrace the color and clear spirit with the divine artwork of the mandala. Mandalas are a timeless artistic offering for creating unity, harmony, and peace. My name is Chris Fisher, and I've spent years creating mandalas, and they are now available online at www.chrisfisher.com. Come and experience the world of color, form, and function with t-shirts, coffee mugs, note cards, and limited edition prints. These vibrant, lively paintings and products express optimism, oneness, and spiritual balance for all who use them. At www.chrisflisher.com. www.chrisflisher.com and enter a world of possibility and color.
Welcome back to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Flisher. This is a show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure. And we are always on an adventure here. And today I've got a wonderful guest. Her name is Joni Patrick. She's a Vedic astrology. And her website, which is your website, Joni? Which one do you want to promote?
It's galacticcenter.org.
Galacticcenter.org. And if you go to my website, chrisflisher.com, or to the Contact Radio website, you'll be able to click through to Joni's site. Now, Joni is a Vedic astrologer, which is actually based, it's sort of the Indian tradition, Hindu tradition of astrology, and it differs considerably from Western astrology. But what we have learned and what we have known for years is that it has a much more of a predictive quality to the information that she can derive from the chart. So, since we just had this amazing experience this last week with a new president being inaugurated, and we are in a situation that is unprecedented in many, many years with regard to the fact that the economy is stressed, we've got wars going on, we're at a terrible time, at least from the outset, of what looks like to be a very challenging time for those of us on the earth. We're going to ask Joni what she sees coming forward in the year 2009, and we'll see what sort of things we can expect to have coming down, because Vedic astrology is known for the predictive accuracy. So what do you see coming up, Joni?
Well, I keep calling this the year of the Great Awakening, because this is where people start to realize what's truly important in life, because with the financial markets and everything changing, the only way we could look is within. And this this is what, you know, all of astrologers have been wanting and hoping for. And I get chills thinking about what's about to happen, because this is going to be a reemergence and awakening of spiritual truth. You see, throughout history, you know, we started with the age of Pisces, which we're currently in. And the age of Pisces is all about our beliefs, it's I believe. Mm-hmm. So throughout this time, all the churches have been built. And now
that's very much validated by what we have learned in Western astrology.
Oh, it's
too.
The same.
We're looking at a new time, an emergence of a community, a back to the earth kind of routine and resurgence.
Right. Well, you see, this month, as a matter of fact, in a few days on the 26th, is going to be the solar eclipse.
That's right.
And all astrologers, we use eclipses as major turning points in the world. And this eclipse happens to be tied up with Jupiter. And in Vedic astrology, this eclipse and Jupiter are in Capricorn, and Jupiter is debilitated in the sign of Capricorn. So this is going to be the change, of course, it's also government, big changeover in government, a big shift, but also it's about the big shift that's about to happen with the stock market and with the finances. I got to tell you, this is going to be one of the worst years financially. But this is where the reemergence and the wake-up call is coming. You know, I'm looking at, we all as astrologers, I still use the outer planets as a Western astrologer for 20 years.
So
I'm looking at the Saturn-Uranus opposition, which will happen, as a matter of fact, five times through, you know, and the first hit was, of course, on Election Day, November 4th.
Yeah, coming up the end of February, which might be when we hear this news about the stock market.
Right.
Did you see the stock market really crashing?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be, I think what happened in October is the tip of the iceberg, I hate to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to put a lot of fear in people, because I believe through conscious awareness and shifting our thoughts, we can change things. I definitely believe in free will.
To be forewarned is to be forearmed as well, and so therefore we can prepare ourselves in some way that will allow us to alleviate that or make it as less the impact less.
Yes, and throughout all my writings on my website, I have always made reference to a lot of omens, and I get omens all the time that are predictive of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep getting the omen of the 60s, which is reminiscent that there's going to be a reemergence of the 60s.
Absolutely.
The late 60s,
I see that totally.
And one of the great things that happened out of the 60s, you got to admit, was the music, was the film, was the artistic.
Oh, it was an amazing. Cultural, unprecedented cultural burst. And that, you know, going back to the 60s, that would be close to a 42 or 43-year cycle, which was a Uranian cycle.
You bet. That was the last time that Uranus opposed Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it takes about 40 to 42 years for it to oppose.
Right. And that's right back where we started from there. And it's in they're immutable, well, in Western astrology, they're immutable signs.
But they're in the same signs that they were 40 years ago, as well as the same signs they were 40 years prior to that, which was around the time of 1918. Let me tell you what happened both those times.
Yeah, the Roaring Twenties.
Well, 1918 was actually the biggest flu pandemic that ever hit the planet. 40 million people died in a very short amount of time. Yeah. And then 1968 was the last opposition. That was the slew of assassinations that happened around that time.
Yes.
And just what it really was really a rebellion against what's happening in the government and in the world. And that's, you know, I remember the burnings of flags back then.
Yeah, I do too.
The same thing's happening. People,
but, you know, revolution does not have to be a negative thing. People need to understand that because revolutions can manifest themselves in a very positive way. And we've already had a revolution if you think about the shift in power.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. It's just I still get a sense that people are angry. And
they are angry. They don't like where their money's going. And they're,
right.
I almost see, you know, sort of revolution in the streets. It's hard not to be angry.
I agree.
Yeah.
But,
you,
you
see
know,
your 401k dwindling.
Right.
You see your house value dwindling. You see it all coming undone, and you just don't know where to go sometimes.
Exactly.
So what would be good advice for people kind of heading into the next few months with regard to this?
Well, one thing I'm going to say is to find balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is to meditate, because we have to start connecting to our spiritual part of us, because when you have a balance of your spiritual life, you don't experience all the difficulty in the material life. It's just that simple. So if people would take the time to connect to the divinity within them, to pay attention to their dreams when they go to sleep at night, that's when we connect to the subconscious mind, and furthermore, to change what they think, because our thoughts create our world. So pay attention to what you're saying and what you're thinking. We can change the world if we can shift this energy, but it really starts with shifting with what we believe in.
Yeah.
And
now
we,
you know, when it comes to the dreams in the subconscious, there's only so much that we have control over that as a human being. So if you're lying in bed and your dreams are coming through, and they tend to be upsetting dreams or dreams of great mm-hmm. fortune, how does that manifest in the daily world? I mean, if you are getting a sort of a nagging, a tug that something's not right, what would you do?
Well, I'll give you an example. Last night I had this recurring dream that I absolutely despised. I dreamt I was back in college, and I forgot to go to these classes, and it was graduation day.
Oh,
so that's a symbol. It's trying to teach me something. I'm not ready. I'm not ready for something I think I'm ready for. Mm-hmm. And I need to go back and take care of business. So I think you look at your dreams to understand where you're at, to teach you what you need to be doing in your conscious, aware life. It's just, it's our subconscious trying to tell us something.
Yeah, and I believe there's a very strong correlation there. And I think that what people need to do is when they feel their gut tugging them a certain way, they really need to heed that, I think.
Exactly. So those are some of my ideas. But let me go on and tell you about some specific dates and times, what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
First, I mentioned that February 5th is going to be another opposition with Uranus and Saturn. So you're going to see that a few weeks before that, and that's where we are practically right now, there's going to be some big shifts and changes in the stock market, exactly what happened in October.
Seeing the taste of that already, because it
exactly.
has gone down. Right.
Yeah. And so another thing is Venus is going to go retrograde, which means it comes closest to the planet Earth, and it will remain in the same sign for 4 months. In sidereal astrology, it's going to be in Pisces, which is its exaltation sign. So between January 27th and May 30th, Venus will be in Pisces, which triggers all these changes with music, with creativity, with movies.
Right, very real creative.
Art.
Yeah, well, anytime Venus is involved, you're going to see a huge explosion of art or the acceptance of art or people reaching out for art as a soothing, meditative process, because they need to have art in their lives as a way to help soften this difficult time.
Yes, it gives us inspiration, and it just moves us mm-hmm. in an emotional way. So that's what we need, and that's what will be developed during this year. Now, around February 13th, that's a very specific day. You as an astrologer probably use this technique as well. But the technique is any time a planet crosses over the degree of the previous eclipse, it's like a landmine and something happens. It's like an explosion. On September 11th of 2001, Mars crossed over on that day the degree of the previous eclipse. So we have this happening again on February 13th. Mars will cross over the degree of the eclipse that happened in January, and that is 12 degrees of Capricorn. This is sidereal, remember. But it's the same thing in Western. You don't get away from the transits. They're still going to be happening on the same day.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So Mars will be crossing over the 12 degrees of Capricorn on that day.
Yes. So that's important. Now, let me talk to you about March. March is huge. March is, if you'll look at the new moon chart, there are two yods occurring in that chart, which means this is sort of like the big radical change. And, you know, the yod is called, and it's a quincunx aspect that creates like a V or a Y in the chart, excuse me. And
right.
It's sort of like, it means the finger of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it means something's going to sweep in and take care of and change things. It's going to be a radical change. I think if you're waiting for the other shoe to drop in terms of the finances and the markets, that will be the month.
March will be when we see the stuff fall apart.
It's not February, but
more February, but I can see March as well. I mean, it could just happen at any time in that
right.
period. I think we'd see it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at April as a very, very dangerous time for Obama, because in both astrologies, we both know that he has Mars in the eighth house.
Yes.
And
the eighth house is rules death, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for explaining that. So what's going to happen around that time is Saturn will conjunct his Mars while Uranus opposes it. But
mm-hmm.
I think he'll be okay during that time. I'm really concerned more about the fall when his birthday falls on the lunar eclipse. That's a very dangerous sign whenever your birthday falls on a lunar eclipse.
Okay.
Because that means in your solar return chart, you've got the sun and the moon tied up with Rahu and Ketu, which is the north and the south node of the moon.
So
it's like the eclipses are falling across.
Eclipses tend to have, in Western astrology, we give them special attention for at least a month before and a month after, typically.
We do, too. Yeah, mm-hmm. you'll see. I agree with that. That's totally true. Now,
yeah.
May, June, and July, I see as this will be the time when consciousness will shift and change. And what I see is Jupiter and Neptune will conjoin together. Now, you know, Jupiter and Neptune can be incredibly spiritual. It can give new hope. Movies, films as Neptune come about that are conscious changing. But at the same time, it can be very delusional. And I see a lot of cold.
Well, delusion can be also a way of sort of hiding. It can be a way of escapism is big with Neptune. It's always a matter of that sort of illusion, the underworld. There might be a resurgence in occultism or mysticism. And even a recurrence of addictions and drugs are very large.
You bet.
Or there's more of a tendency to be victim of those things, I guess is what I would say. There's a very strong tendency to be part of that.
So I tell my students to please be aware that there's going to be two types of spirituality. One is delusional, one is rooted in fear, and one is rooted in truth. So always ask yourself, is there fear associated with it? Is there control through fear? That's the delusional. That's an easy one.
But you can also dictate some of that yourself. I mean, we do have the ability, I believe, to take certain situations. And, I think that most of the growth happens at the hardest times in the charts.
Yeah.
At least with Western astrology, my experience has always been that when you look at the squares and the oppositions, that's when you get the most growth, and that's where you get the most challenge. But out of that comes, nothing good comes easy, so to speak.
You're right. This is going to be the most pivotal year of all. These challenges are going to shake us up to make us look at things in a different perspective and change. We need mm-hmm. this.
Yeah. Now, so keep going. We're curious. Now, you've got our interests all peaked.
Okay. Now, in June, I want you to be aware there's going to be severe weather,
mm-hmm.
more tornadoes, power outages, and, that will happen in America. You'll see a lot of this. The sun and moon, the new moon will be in the nakshatra Ardra, which is actually severe winds and storms, so you'll see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm seeing July is where we have another series of eclipses. We have a lunar eclipse on the 7th, and we have a solar eclipse on the 21st. And both of these times, these solar eclipses, and this is Western as well, you notice where the path is, where the total eclipse path is, and it's going to be, of course, over the middle of India, the central China, where Beijing is, and
right.
Mumbai. So this is going to be where you're going to find the most earthquakes, because eclipses are all about earthquakes, and they're all about
They seem to be very powerful with weather patterns, monsoons,
yes.
tsunamis, all those things are associated with eclipses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Earthquakes
that's
are very, very big.
Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'm also looking at, just to jump ahead, October is going to be an incredible changes. I can't even tell you, because that's going to be the time when together Mars comes together with K2, which is the south node of the moon. What that means is, in Vedic astrology, Mars is real estate and property. And when it's together with K2, which is loss of, it represents that the housing markets are going to really go through a real difficult time in the month of October.
So we could probably see more price reductions in houses at that point in time, which if people are refinancing now for houses that are higher, or, you know, the value is that they may find that equity is gone, right?
Yeah, yeah. And another thing is, let me remind you, same as Western astrology, they're going to be in the sign of Cancer. Well, Mars is debilitating in Cancer, but Cancer represents home and family.
Right, yeah.
And I think there's going to be more weakening of families, where there's going to be more divorce, more family problems with properties and homes falling about. So I actually saw in a vision that there was going to be people out of their homes and squatters, just, you know, abandoned neighborhoods. And so that could be with the Mars in Cancer. Another thing, because it's going to be in the sign of Cancer, of course, is water. And these are two malefic planets, and K2 usually means pandemics and flus. We got to watch our water then. Poisons could be in the water when we come around to this time of Mars being in Cancer with K2.
Okay.
Another thing is, I noticed that there will be the exact configuration that there was on September 11th, which was where Jupiter was with the north node of the moon, Rahu, and Mars was with the south node of the moon, K2. And then what triggered it was when the transiting moon came and set it off with either conjunction or opposition.
I see.
Let me give you these dates. October 11th through the 13th will be when the moon will transit over this Jupiter in Capricorn. And let's see. No, that will be when the moon's in Cancer. So it will be conjunct K2 Mars. And then October 26th and the 27th, the moon will be in Capricorn, which will conjunct the Jupiter in Rahu. So this was the same configuration that happened in September 11th of 2001. So that's a bit of a danger. It, you know, I'm not saying it will happen.
Right.
It's possible.
And, you know, it's interesting. October is a very shaky month anyway with regard to the finances. Historically, we've always had our biggest problems in October.
Really? I've never heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean,
that
the stock market always takes its biggest hits in October for some reason. There's always this major correction, and I'm not sure if it's a psychological thing or whatever it is, but it always seems to be a very tumultuous month for that. And, you know, if we were to, you know, if things escalate and we were at the spot where we're pulling out of Iraq at that time and things begin to escalate and we've pushed the buttons on some sort of militancy, we might see that happening then in the form of an attack on the country, I suppose, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely here. You know, I hope I'm wrong, and I think through conscious awareness. But remember, the months of May, June, and July, there will be this resurgence of spirituality and people becoming aware and awakened. Now,
yeah, you know what I see? I see a very strong resurgence. You know how back in the 60s, I mean, I grew up back then, and I remember... One of the best things about it was I loved the sense of community. We always had a sense of you're my brother, you're my sister, and was never this, you know, we weren't all withdrawn like we are now. There was a real sense of community, and I see that being a very much, from a Western standpoint, the Aquarian age coming up to light with Neptune
exactly.
At that time will be at 24 degrees Aquarius, and there's this great sense of community. And of course, Jupiter's going through Aquarius at that time as well, and Jupiter's all about expansion and pushing these larger ideas.
Right.
So I see the same sort of thing happening, and that will sort of prepare us for whatever we have to come forward, because we'll have resources at our disposal. We'll have a greater network of people.
Right, and the thing is about that time. Remember in the late 60s how everybody actually wanted to know your sign and cared?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to come back. Astrology is going to come back full force.
I believe it big time, because people are going to see the value. They're going to see that this is something that has great value and great predictability to it. So then beyond that, Joni, what do you see?
Well, okay, October is the turning point, because in sidereal astrology, Jupiter, Uranus, and Neptune all are are retrograde back into signs that they were before. So we're going to feel like we're going backwards in October.
Yeah.
So beyond that, I'm looking at November, the nodes are going to shift into Sagittarius and Gemini, which for us, it will be a new learning. They're going to come close to the galactic center. So there's going to be a new awareness, new learning. We have to.
Mm-hmm.
And just to look at a little bit beyond that, Jupiter will conjunct Uranus in 2010.
Yeah,
and
June.
Yeah, exactly. This is going to move us more towards the 2012 date.
Absolutely.
Which I think this is an awareness. And you know what I think is going to happen, Chris? I think we could be aware that aliens truly exist.
I was just going to say that. I think that I have looked at that date for years, the Uranus and Jupiter conjunction, and in Western astrology, it's going to be at 0 degrees Aries, which is the beginning of the zodiacal wheel.
Yes,
so
I love that.
It indicates a major shift, and at the same time, it's going to be squared by Pluto at 3 degrees Capricorn and opposing Saturn at the early degrees of Libra. So we've got a grand cross there at that point in time, including, and most importantly, with Jupiter and Uranus, which Jupiter is all about largeness, expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Uranus is about sudden change. I think that's a possibility for the final acknowledgement that we are not the only people in the world will come to light at that time. I think it's going to be huge, whatever it's going to be.
I think. It's going to be awareness that, oh, my God, they are really here. And, you know, what can we gain from them or not? But it's going to break down so many belief systems.
It's going to break down belief systems. But, you know, I have always had the belief since I've been a child that if that ever did happen, what it would finally force us to do would be to come together as a planet and sort of address that as a planet, because we are a species on a ball circling around the sun. So we have now a cohesive a pinching point, a tipping point that brings us together, because we have to cope with this extraterrestrial, which is not something of our realm today.
I know. It's so beyond what we can imagine.
So we finally, you know, Muslim would have to work with Hindu. Hindu would have to work with Jew. Christian would have to work with, you know, all these religions and dogmas would dissipate, would melt away, because we'd have to deal with, how do we deal with the outside forces here?
Right. It's like we're moving closer to the age of Aquarius. Where it's
we certainly are.
It's saying, I know, this is the truth. There is no more false beliefs. It's like, here is the reality of where we are and what's happening, and this is real.
And so, I think the important thing to bring out for people so they don't go, you know, charging off and saying the sky is falling, is that because of being forewarned of this information allows us to make conscious decisions about how we are entering into this world and how we address it. I always use the analogy of judo. And the way judo works is that if you know this person is coming towards you, you harness that energy as it comes towards you, and you turn it back in a way that's positive, so that you avoid conflict and you avoid the problems, but by the same token, you thwart the attack or you thwart the oncoming pressure. I think the same sort of concept works with forthcoming events that we see coming. You know, be open to them, embrace them as they come, and be prepared, and the blow will be much softer, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But it's really all about this new awakening, and it's happening now. And I think it's the most exciting time to ever be alive because of it. You know, there's going to be more about the spiritual life. And that's why I tell everyone, please be more connected to your spiritual side. And this whole phenomena that's happening out here, the year 2009, is going to be nothing but an awakening for you, because the spiritual world is just as real as the physical world. People just need to connect to it. That will give them the balance that they've been searching for. That will give them the security they've been searching for and the meaning to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. I mean, it certainly is a remarkable time. So we need to be, I mean, there's a sense of trepidation and fear that people always get, and it's something that we have to be mindful of, that's all. I think it's just a matter of being mindful. If you're fully present with regard to this, I think that we don't approach it with the same fear, because, you know, changes can be very difficult, but, you know, ultimately changes for our higher good.
Always.
And having that higher good brings us to the next level. You know, we sort of have these major shifts in the human consciousness that do get us to these next levels, and these levels are necessary for our evolution.
Everything's about growth.
Absolutely.
We're constantly growing. That's why we change.
Yes, and that's where the beauty. So when we talk about growing pains, yes, it is painful sometimes. Mm-hmm. It does require sacrifice. It does require, you know, breaking out of our habits. That's the biggest thing, is breaking out of our habits. Well, listen, Joni, we're running out of time, but I want to be sure that we get your information out there. So if people want to contact Joni, for their own predictions, she can be reached at www.galacticcenter.org. And that website is available from my website, www.chrisflisher.org, or the Contact Talk Radio website. And you can contact Joni there. And I encourage you to do that, because she's a remarkable astrologer with a great deal of knowledge and wisdom and foresight into what was to come, which is very valuable with regard to making your own life work. And astrology is always about the willingness to engage in a conversation about your karmic path. And I think it's important that we address that concept from that point.
Yes.
So is there anything you can say real quickly, Joni? You've got about 30 seconds to wrap it up. We got to go.
Well, I just want everyone to know this is going to be one of the most exciting years for spirituality, truth.
And that's great.
And we're going to come to a place where we lose all of our fears and come to a place where we know the truth.
And that is perfect for us all. There's no question about it. That's where we need to be. It's where the universe is pointing us.
Yes,
unfortunately, we are out of time. I have to go. But, Joni, my guest has been Joni Patry today. I thank you so much, Joni, for coming on the show. And if you could just hang on after we sign off, it would be great. But to all of you, stay tuned for next week. And always be open to possibilities and approach the world with good intention. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Turning of the Wheel with your host, Chris Flisher. To schedule a reading with me or to order artwork, you may visit my website at www.chrisflisher.com. That's www.chrisflisher.com. Or email me, and you can...